Thank you. So today we're going to talk about Team Foundation Service. I appreciate everybody that came to the repeat session today. I did this once on Tuesday in the morning, so I'm glad you're all here. There's plenty of space, feel free to move up. Usually I say, let me try to get through this, but you can ask any question you want. There's so few people here, I think we can handle it, the volume. I'm going to try to give everybody an introduction to Team Foundation Service. If you, let's say, are already a really expert user in Team Foundation Service or 2012 web access in your on-premises installation, this might not be the session for you. Just want to make sure everyone's using their time well. But if you've, let's say, you have on-premises TFS today, you've never seen 2012, the web access portion, or you're just interested to see how service plays into things, this is a good session for you. So a little bit about me to start things off. I've been building software for about 15 years. I've done all sorts of verticals. I've been in payroll, banking, media. I've been working at Microsoft about 5 years now in the field as a consultant, in Premier as a support dev manager. So I have a lot of customer contact time. And more recently, I joined the Visual Studio DPE team. So now I'm at places like this talking to you guys about Team Foundation Service and Visual Studio as well. I'm also a big gamer. I love to play lots of PC games. I love to write code. I write a lot of code and use Team Foundation Service for my own repositories and such. It's really nice to have somebody else do the hard work of managing the server. My contact information is right there. I definitely mean it. If you have questions today, afterwards, whatever, please let me know. I'm here to help if I can. So let's start off with the introduction to Team Foundation Service. But before we can really jump into it, I want to make sure we have the agenda in front of us so we know what we're going to talk about today. And that is the URL that's the most important URL for you to remember. That is where you get started. That's where you can log in if you forget your service URL, et cetera. So make sure that that's a place you visit after today if you have not already. And let's bring up the agenda. So today we're going to cover a couple of things. We'll do a very quick recap of what is Team Foundation Server. So that way I can position, because there's often folks that maybe have never seen the Microsoft ALM solution. So I want to make sure you know what is server, what is service relative to server. We'll go through that for about 5-10 minutes at most. And then we'll jump into the tool. Most of this session is demos. I'm going to be using very little Visual Studio and lots of Internet Explorer. I'm going to be showing you the web access. We'll talk about agile planning tools. I'll show you version control on the web, how that connects to Visual Studio as well. That's the only time I really use Visual Studio in here. Build services, continuous deployment to Azure, and web-based test case management. So we'll cover all of those, and you'll have a good sort of feel for what the product can offer. The rest will be up to you to go out there and learn it. So let's start off with Team Foundation Server. Team Foundation Server, the product, is up to version 2012. The versions are years. And 2012 has been around, well, Team Foundation Server has been around for a very long time. I don't know how many years. Probably you could say 10 years or something along those lines. Maybe somebody here knows. Anybody? How long Team Foundation Server has been around? Yeah, me neither. So it's been around for a long, long time. But I would say that 2012 is the first time that even I, as a user of TFS since I think 2005, have really appreciated the web access portion of it. For me, Team Foundation Server has been like Visual Source Safe. Does anybody here have Visual Source Safe experience, VSS? Couple of folks, right? Yeah. Sooner or later, somebody in the room has hit VSS. Well, Team Foundation Server, that's all it was for me, just source control management. It's a lot more than that now. Team Foundation Server sits in the middle of all of the Microsoft products as an ALM solution, application lifecycle management. It tries to provide a place where you can store your source control, you can store your tests, you can store your work, and you can coordinate all of that together. Because the more coordinated it is, the easier it is to sort of manage your work. If your work is related to your code, and your code's related to your tests because it's connected to your work, everything connects pretty well together. Folks can use Team Foundation Server with Eclipse if they're Java developers. They can use it with Xcode now that we have Git for Team Foundation Service. They can use it with Visual Studio, pretty much any version that people could possibly be using today. Even VB6 will connect to Team Foundation Server for source control. Like we've made everything fairly backwards compatible, at least for that. But to really get the best experience, you want to be probably in Visual Studio 2010, and you want to probably be using Team Foundation Server 2010 or above. 2012 is really great. 2013 is coming out. It's a very, very fast-paced world. And Team Foundation Server also has the ability to not just sort of be your place of storing source control and work items and everything else, but really be your collaboration space. And that's one of the new things we're doing right now. Make it the center of your team so that not everybody feels disconnected. I'm going to show you how Team Room changes that concept. But today, Team Foundation Server, the on-premises doesn't have that. Another big piece of the server is builds. We can do builds out of Team Foundation Server. In other words, you can take your code, you can build it, you can push it out somewhere, something else can pick it up and potentially deploy it out to an environment. Lots of pieces. You can get Team Foundation Server three different ways today. You can buy it and install it. You can get MSDN subscription, let's say, get Team Foundation Server ISO down to your machine, install it in about 10 minutes if you just want to do it quick and dirty, and it'll run just fine. You'll have everything I'm going to show you today, except for the features we released on Monday, because those features will be available with Team Foundation Server 2013 as a product. You can also go to one of our cloud partners, where we have partners that will give you a virtual machine in the cloud. They'll do the hard work of setting things up for you and give you access. A lot of them will give you full access. So once they're done setting it up, if you want to go crazy, you could. Or the newest option, the green box, is Team Foundation Service. This is where we become your cloud partner. We host it for you. And we also give you the benefit of we own the product, and therefore we can keep patching the product for you on your behalf, giving you the latest features. That's why people on TF Service have all the features from Monday. They flipped the switch in the database, and all our customers got the features, as opposed to on-premises or even with a partner. Either the partner has to update it for you, or you have to update it yourself, so that's the benefit. You do lose one thing with Team Foundation Service, and that is full control, right? We take some of that control from you, but we give you a lot of other things. We'll go through the comparison in more detail later, but these are all valid ways to have it. We're committed to all three of these. Team Foundation Service is just one of those options. So what is Team Foundation Service relative to the server, the product? And why would you use it? The benefit of Team Foundation Service is that you can get up and running very quickly. I'll show you what that means. It's literally a few clicks. You have your Microsoft account, which we used to call LiveID. You log into the website, tfs.visualstudio.com. You hit sign up. You're almost done. I mean, you just have to pick a URL. And we stand up a server, as far as you're concerned, as far as Visual Studio is concerned. We give you up to 5 users for free. No catch, you know, just 5 users for free. There are certain services within Team Foundation Service, like build and web test case management, where we are still calling those preview in the service. And we're working on some issues with them. You know, they're quite complex things to get out there, or just very new, and we're still figuring out the long-term billing. But everybody will get some kind of benefit out of it, and MSDN subscribers will get more than 5 users for free. They'll get as many as they have MSDN subscriptions. We just haven't finalized pricing for people that want to pay for it out of pocket. We will publish that as soon as we have it available. Even I don't know what that's going to be. I can't imagine it won't be competitive. They're also planning to charge something for like build services after a certain capacity level. Just like we announced on Monday, we have load services, right? That's going to cost Microsoft money to run that for you. So depending on how much you want to use it, there's probably going to be some charge. And again, free will get something, MSDN will get a lot more, and then we'll give you something you can pay with a credit card as part of the Azure kind of ecosystem there. Lots of exciting stuff. The other by default benefit of service, and this is a real thing I see all the time, people install Team Foundation Server. Their IT department does the installation, their devs do it. The problem is it's on their network. It's behind their firewalls. Getting somebody to approve, hey, let's put this source control out there on the internet is really hard because, well, how are we going to secure it? How are we going to patch it, et cetera? Microsoft, by default, puts it on the internet. You can say it's a good thing or a bad thing. I think it's a good thing because we have invested a ton of money and a ton of people and a ton of software and third parties that nothing but security monitoring. Nothing is foolproof, but we're giving it a very, very good attempt. You know, we'll cross our fingers there. And operational costs are lower. You never have to worry about a server that you have to upgrade or maintain or you have to pay people, et cetera. Continuous feature delivery is that benefit I mentioned before. You're going to get features every sprint. Our team builds per sprint. We release features. And in updates, we roll those features into the server product. So people who have server wait 3 months or more, you guys get it every 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, depending on the length of the sprint that they decide and how much work goes into it. They've basically been releasing something cool every couple of weeks. Azure integration is the other benefit that is not currently planned on premises. Azure integration means if you have Azure account and you have an Azure website, you can push every check-in if you want, or a manual execution point where you execute the build, you can push to Azure. And that's very cool for test environments, your blog, you know, things that are not as some production websites you don't want to do that with. I wouldn't recommend it. But for a lot of things, it's kind of cool. I'll show you all of that today. I kind of also like to put this up and say, well, this is a good way of thinking about it. If you're a small team, if you're less than five people especially, you're just good to go. If you're a team of any size and you're just looking to get rid of the hosting, then this is, especially with MSDN subscription, this is the way to go. If you want to, let's say you have TFS on premises and you're just here to learn more about the product, and you come back and you're like, I want to try some stuff. Where do I do that? Well, go try it in TF Service. Create your own account. Also, My Projects, that's what I call it because I have My Projects up in there. If you do any code in your spare time, if you just like to tinker, if you build, I don't know, apps in your spare time, whatever, this is a great way to do it because it's free for you, one person or more. In fact, I have a couple of people working with me. We collaborate. It's really great. Well, that's enough slides. Let's show you some demos. And please, any questions, let me know. Just wave, holler, question.
So how do you go above five
users today? The question is, how do you go above five users today as per billing is concerned? You could go over. You just won't know how much you will pay once we charge. We're not going to like give you a bill, but at some point we'll make an announcement at this date, this is how much it's going to cost you. If everybody's an MSDN subscriber, that'll be automatic benefit for those folks. Don't have to worry. If they're not, you kind of, you're taking a little bit of a risk with us. But we're fairly reasonable. I can't imagine this being a very expensive service. Okay, any other questions? All right, so let's show you the getting started experience. This is the website that I had up on the screen before. Let's zoom in a little bit. And please, if anybody wants to get closer, don't hesitate. The website is really great. It gives you a way to learn all about the service. It lets you sign up to the service, and it also lets you log into your service account if you forgot the URL you gave it, which somebody on stage here did. You can guess who that person is, at least for the first couple of times. There's also a tab on pricing. This is where we're going to publish the pricing. This is where everything Dimitri said can be confirmed. There's a Learn tab. The Learn tab is kind of interesting. Oops. I don't have Zoomit installed. Well, started. That's better. On the Learn tab, you'll find something interesting, and that is, I'm going to focus a lot on the web access portion of it, but these are the officially supported approaches to use it with a product. In other words, if you want to do source control, you can do it with Visual Studio against Visual Studio source control. You can do it with Visual Studio against the Git repository. You can do it with Eclipse or Xcode. Those are all supported platforms. You click on those, they'll give you more information how to connect. If anybody here builds, you know, iPhone apps, you can use it. The way we view Team Foundation service or server is really independent of the programming language. Of course, it takes time to get good at supporting every platform, but our goal is, if you're a developer on some platform building code, we want you to have us as an option. We're trying to make it easier and easier. But of course, the Visual Studio folks have already the benefit of being supported for 10 plus years probably. Lots of good information here on code, build, test, collaborate, all the things we're going to talk about today. And finally, sign up is in the top right. You click on sign up. I'm not going to demo beyond this page because I don't believe it's necessary. That's the only thing you have to fill out. Your live ID and an account name that hasn't been taken yet. That's it. You hit create. It's going to give you an account in a couple of seconds. So that's a lot easier than installing it on premises, I can promise you, if you have never done that. I have an account. It's one account per live ID for ownership. But your account can be given access to many other instances. So if, let's say, all of you created a service, you can all give me access to yours. That'll work fine. If I try to create another one, unless I create a fake live ID, it won't let me. It'll say sorry. In fact, the funny story is I needed to have more than one at some point. And they said, oh, yeah, we'll enable you. And they had a backwards way of doing that to give me as many accounts as I wanted. And that backwards way broke when I needed it, and they couldn't do it. And I had to create a bunch of fake accounts. It was pretty funny. I was like, so you guys don't test the hacks? And that's OK. So let's take a look at what this will look like if we were to create it. If we did create, and I'll try to zoom in as much as I can here, whatever is reasonable. If let's say we hit the create button and everything went successful, this is what you would see. This is the landing page of your account, of your collection. That's a more familiar term in TFS speak. I already have a bunch of recent projects because this is obviously not a brand new collection, not a brand new account. You would have nothing listed here. You would have to choose from one of these two options in the bottom left, this one or this one. And then once you create your team project with or without Git, you would then use the browse all to get to it. And the first time you would browse all, it would appear over here on this list. So that's pretty easy. I'm not going to demo Git. If you guys want to learn more about Git source control, Martin Woodward, who works on that team as a product manager, he did a session here. The video will be up if it's not up already. Take a look at it. We're going to use like the standard approach, which is the Visual Studio source control option. There's really not that much difference from my demos, to be honest. I'm just more comfortable there. So I'm going to hit New Project. Second session. And I have to choose a couple of options here. Let's go through them together. I have to choose a project name. It's unique, cannot be changed. If you really want to change it badly, you'll have to delete it and recreate it, so watch out for that. Description, that could be changed anytime. Process template, and which version control. So even though like I clicked a button that said TFS version control instead of Git, I can still change that decision down here if I wanted to. Templates, we support in the box the following three templates. That's how your work items are going to look. That's the process they're going to follow. We don't allow you to customize process templates in TF service. That is the price you pay for being in a cloud with us. I just had a customer come up to me. I was at the booth, and they are upgrading from 2010 to 2012, and they customized their process template a while back. They don't remember why. All they know is they did, and they're like, well, how do we use the brand new project template that you guys have? Well, there's no really migration path. That's why we don't allow it in the service. There is no really, once you customize that XML file, there's no good way to sort of take your data with you into the new process template. So we commit that as long as you stick to the default, which you have no choice, we will update the process template as features are added, but you can't customize it. So that's the price that you pay. And I'm going to click on Scrum as my, because that's the demo that we're going to do today, and hit the Create button. It will go into the database right now, spin up a team project, create you a team room, lots of stuff I'll show you in a second. And this should be done fairly quickly. I really should juggle something when this is happening, but it doesn't take that long. Anybody use Team Foundation Server, like any version today? Two people. OK, three. That's not bad. It's above average, technically speaking, in the room. That's good. We're here to learn. So this will be done in a few seconds, and we'll navigate to the project. There you go. Martin Woodward, who works on the product team, whenever he does this session, he likes to be snarky and say, yeah, we like to add stuff like this. You'll absolutely love this. Well, I think you will. I'm biased. So I'm going to hit Navigate to Project. And now we went from the collection homepage to your team homepage. The team homepage is a hyperlink. You can save that and go here every single time. You can switch teams. Like once you have more than one, you can come up here and switch the team, or you can say, I want to go home, which will take you to where we just were, or browse. It gives you the interface to look or search through different project teams. As you can see, I do a lot of demos, and this probably will keep growing. Once in a while, I go in and delete them, but not this week. So we're in our second session. The thing with demoing the homepage, though, it's not very interesting right now. We have nothing in here yet. So I'm going to switch to one which has data, show you that, come back here, and we're going to work from the blank one. But I want to show you what it could look like, give you a view into the future. So I'm going to switch to the Tailspin Toys team. This is a much more built-out team project. I've been working here for a while. Let me explain what you're looking at. Since this is a Scrum project template, we use the concept of sprints. So there's a sprint one. Sprint one has dates. There's a bunch of items assigned with a number designating how much work is assigned to people. And that work is represented as hours. If you had Team Foundation Server, you could customize this to be any H or dog, or you know, you could put any letter or word there that you wanted. On this service, we assume it's hours, but your team can make believe that number is anything. It's just a number. So most people do work with hours, so I think it's a pretty good thing. Then there's a burn down chart. You can click on it. You can kind of see the way it should be going, but because either this is a real team or a demo, one of those two things, it's really not going down. Work's actually going up, and that happens in real projects all the time. I did a year in a Scrum project. We did a very good job, but these charts often look pretty bad towards the middle of the week, and then they get better. Then you have team favorites. On the left, you can pin. So you can't pin from this page, but once you get out into the ecosystem, like let's say you're looking at work or bugs, you can pin a query back to the home page so you can get your team to see everything. This is like what everybody sees when they come in. So the collection, the project administrator can make those decisions, or team members, depending on your setup. You can even see source control. So this is a product backlog. I'll zoom in a little bit to make it easier. This is how many items we have in the backlog. This is how many feedback requests we've opened up, how many bugs. This is the status of recent builds. Three of them failed, two of them succeeded. And recently, there was one change to source control for the Tailspin Toys web project. It's a lot of good information for a project team to have. Also, we have team members on the right. Everybody in the project team, within reason, is here. If you have a small team, you'll see all the folks in there. If it gets bigger, then you know, obviously we can't fit everybody here. So I don't know what the cutoff is. You can always click on Manage All Members and see everybody who's in the team. You can see the name that they've chosen to use, the picture they've chosen to use. That's completely up to them. The email is the only thing that's the live ID, and therefore that's what you see as an administrator that they can't change. But if they want to prank you, they can go change their name to be you and put their own picture in there. It's their profile. You really can't mess with them. You can just yell at them. So that's the homepage, and you navigate everywhere within your project from here. The final thing I want to show you is the team room concept. Again, it's more interesting in this demo than in the one we're about to do, because it actually is simulated to have four people inside of it. So I'm going to click on team room, something we announced just recently. Team room is a feature we enabled Monday, and it is, for the first time, I would say, in Team Foundation server or service, a place for collaboration, a place to see activity from a project perspective, from a team perspective, right? A team could have many projects. Your team can chat in here, but that's really the least of the benefit. The biggest benefit is the activity feed. You can see everything that's actually happening. I kicked off a build today. I can see the build. I can click the little arrow, and I can see what's been happening days before, right? I can hit back, oh, okay. So on this day, which is June 4th, people were entering, leaving the room. Dimitri was chatting. Then we have a change set, fixed the build about, yeah, okay, so Dimitri made a change. One file was edited. If I click on the change set, I jump out. I see the change set details. So it's really a connected way with hyperlinks to all the activity. It is your activity feed. It is durable. Nobody can ever delete anything out of here or change anything. So don't say anything stupid in your team room. Links, if you put them in here, will work. If you mention with a pound sign, with a pound, so like if you want to type, hey, Joanne, can you please take a look at bug pound 29 space, thank you, it'll become a hyperlink. So it has some really nice kind of interactive capabilities. And this is V1. You know, you can imagine this will get better. So that's the team room. Last thing I want to show is that you can, I've been, again, testing so much. I have a ton of rooms I have access to. But on the left, you can see many rooms. If you have permissions, you can create a new room. So you can create like a social room for your team where people can just mess around. Then you can create your project team. And you can say that I want events right here on the right. I want events about builds, code changes, work item updates, code reviews. I want all of that in this official team room, but not in the other one. The other one can be just fun. Question. When you would link it, what would you like to see happen? Okay. So the question is, can tasks that are assigned to you inside of Team Foundation's service web portal or on-premises portal, can they be linked to your tasks as Outlook sees tasks? They're two different things. They're not connected. I really wish they weren't. I like your idea. I've thought about it. Maybe I'll have some influence one day. We'll see. I think we have a lot of sort of, I know sometimes it's terminology duplication, but a lot of times it really would make sense to link the concept of tasks in one place to another, at least optionally. No, but it isn't today. All right, so let's go back to our beginning project. So I'm going to go back to our second session team. Yes? Sure, let's go back to what I just showed. So we'll go back to the Tailspin Toys. We'll go back to the team room. So the link that I clicked, was that this? You mean the, let's go back. We can do it here. So these up here in the top left? Code, history. Okay, if you see it again, just let me know. Sure. So we are going to now move into with homepage. All right. So this is a brand new team. So let's configure this team the way you would if you were just really starting. First, you'd probably want to invite people to work with you, right? Let's say you're not one developer. So you're going to click on Manage. And sorry, I click quickly sometimes. I'm guilty of that, so I'll be slower. Manage All Members button right here in the bottom right. I'm going to click on that. And I'm going to bring up this dialog. Then I'm going to click on the top left, Add, Add User. Now I can start typing any email address that's a live ID. So if, let's say, I know somebody, you know, dimitri@microsoft.com, that's not my real email, but imagine it was, and let's say I made a live ID out of that, because you can use any email, right? It could be outlook.com, it doesn't matter. As long as it's a live ID, if I hit enter right now, that person has access to my Team Foundation service. They don't get an email, but they have access. So do think about who you add here. It's a real system when you use it. Since I've already added people before, my dropdown here will have a bunch of folks listed. And as I type, it'll help me find the right people. So if I type Adam, here's Adam, comes up. Now, I purposefully, these are fake people, so they don't have last names. Ideally, your team would put their real information in here, so it's less, you know, can you imagine five Adams and like, whose picture is that? And that could get bad. So let's add a bunch of folks. I actually did exactly that. I added both Brian Keller and Brian Harry as a test user, and now it's Brian and Brian. So I should listen to my own advice. So here, I've added four different people. I'm going to hit Save. And as soon as I do, the folks are added. It's going to tell me whether or not it was successful. It's going to show me the people I added. If they've set up pictures, it'll show the picture. If you have a live ID and a picture, it's not going to pull it automatically. We separate your work and your personal life. So it's your live ID, but the picture you have to import yourself. Question, sir?
So each person with an MSPN license can have five users?
Everybody in the world can have five users in their team, in their project team. So you can create your service, you can give five people access. Maybe you have two team projects, a total of five people across those two team projects. And that you, after that, we will bill you once there is a billing system. We won't bill you backwards. We won't have to worry about that. We will notify you most likely if your usage is exceeding the free. If you have MSDN, everybody who has a live ID that's associated with MSDN, when they sign into any Team Foundation service, they will have free Team Foundation service access and licenses. The only things that might, five or more, it doesn't matter. It's like, you can have 100 MSDN registered users in your team project, that's fine. You won't be charged.
Now, what about the burndown with
everything you see here without a star to the top right of it is going to be free as far as I know. You know, anything could be changed in the future, and they're still really figuring out the business model here. But I mean, everything I'm hearing says that the only services that we might charge over MSDN, and that's still a might, is services that require CPU processing, so like a load testing service or a build service. Every time you do a build, we give you a VM. We do a build on it, we throw the VM away. We are charged by Azure. Microsoft internally uses Windows Azure and charges business units for their use, less than you guys, but you know, we need to keep our costs reasonable too. We need to make money. So that's going to work. So here, in just to give you that idea, everything on this homepage and everything in these features should be free for MSDN, and I'm guessing this one will be as well. The only one that we might charge is this one here, and load testing, that's not a button anywhere. All right, so now that we've added some people, and this is a Scrum project, I want to set up the iterations. I'm going to click on, I'll show it again. On the bottom right, there's Configure, Schedule, and Iterations. I'm going to click on that. And we want to define what our sprints are going to look like. Again, we're making believe we're a real team here. So I'm going to click Set Date. I'm going to set, you know, this last Monday to next Friday, 2-week sprint. Save that. Set Date. Start. If you notice, it's smart enough to say if your previous sprint was 2 weeks, your start date of your next sprint is the Monday after the Friday of your last sprint ending. And then it puts the end date automatically. So it assumes all your sprints are the same. That's very typical. I like this feature. It makes setting up like a bunch of them really easy, really quickly. So I've defined that. There's different kind of APIs you could build against all data, but I'm not sure if that API lets you configure sprints. I've never looked at that. You don't usually do it very often. Like you configure sprints for 3-4 weeks, and then you have a lot of work in front of you. So it's not usually so bad. I've actually had that thought. I'm like, I wish we had more, like select a bunch of items, but not today. All right, so we've done that, and we want to configure our particular team room because this is a different project. So I'm going to go in, and I'm going to manage the events. Let's close this tab here. So I'm going to say, I want to see when people make code changes. Ah, okay. So we'll get there in 1 second. Click on that. So now we have the ability to exactly what it says here. When a code review is created in or under the following area path, so you can specify the area path if you want to get more detailed, which items you want to see. But basically, when a code review is created, the team room will show a link to that review. That's all this does. So these tabs configure the events which team room shows in the activity feed. All right, so that's all configured. So now that I have my events properly configured, I'm going to go back home. And I'm going to start entering some work. So let's get some work to people. We have a bunch of people that can do things in our project. I'm going to go to the Work tab. And I'm going to create a bunch of stories. Stories in Scrum is, you know, high level what you want to accomplish. So support, marketing, campaign. And it's all like nice Ajax. As you type, it's saving, you know, it gives you like a little spinner, and then it saves to your database, so there's nothing else to click. Update website logo, improve performance of website product search. So here we're defining what our team should be working on as a concept. And then we're going to create tasks from that and assign it to people so they can actually do work. But before we take this, and I'm going to add a few more items just to have a bigger list, some item one, some item two, some item three. I could also, by the way, create bugs from here just as easily if I wanted to, but product backlog is where we'll start. So now that I've done that, I'm going to show you a very nice feature called the Kanban board. Kanban board is the board button in the backlog view. If I click on the board button, it's going to give me a visual task board. Scroll down a little bit. Every item that I create by default is going to be in the Kanban new state, and then I can move it to approved, committed, and done. And this is designed because a lot of organizations, you know, if you don't know what Kanban is or if you don't use Kanban, they have a process by which things we want to work on as ideas get approved or rejected eventually. So here's one scenario which is very, very common. I'm going to customize the columns because I want to change what this looks like a little bit. And I'm going to add another step. I'm going to call this Bob's approval. Anybody else have a Bob in their organization? You know, the guy who basically says yes or no to everything. So this will be his magical step. Now, notice the state here. State and name, so these on top are names. This is, the first column is new. The second column is Bob, approval. The third column is approved. These don't mean anything. They're just visual representations of your workflow. They're useful, but they don't have any hard impact on your work. Your work items, the things you will eventually, as stories, assign to people to work on and break down into tasks, they have states, and those states are modified. And you often have, well, new is still kind of new. Bob approving it, well, that's still new because we have to have somebody, you know, move it like beyond approval to an assignment stage, right? And then it's really approved in my organization. It's completely up to you, right? So I'm going to say assigned and committed. So that'll be my, let's call it assigned plus approved, because that's how my organization works. You can move things around with arrows. You can add anything you want, so that's nice. These numbers up here mean how many items can be in here before it's marked as red. Maybe Bob doesn't like anything more than two items in his queue, or he gets really cranky. So we're going to save that. Now the Kanban board has changed. I have a touch laptop, so I'm just going to use my finger, and this is kind of fun. I can drag things around, so I'm going to give Bob three. His thing's going to go red. He's not happy. If he has three items, well, then Bob, let's approve some stuff, and we can basically go along this path. So let's say that's how we are in our organization. And then I'm going to go ahead and say, all right, I actually know that this is going to be worked on. This is going to be Adam's. So I'm going to change this to Adam. Adam's name appears. I can move it out. I'm just double-clicking. That's how I'm opening these up to set the state. Well, not double-clicking. Sorry, it's a habit. Clicking. No double-clicking required. So now I've given this. Let's give this one to Julie. Save it. There you go. And now Bob can stay with one item for his review. So this is, can be done with mouse, keyboard, touch. I've seen teams pull up really big touch displays. They're getting so cheap now and do stuff instead of, you know, using sticky notes that somebody loses. Or in New York City, where I've lived, they had the big flooding after the hurricane, and a bunch of agencies for many months couldn't get into their buildings. They couldn't access their source control on floor X They couldn't get to their PCs. The power was down. Their work was basically shut down for multiple months completely. You know, that could happen. One of the advantages of hosting with us is we duplicate everything. So even if we lose a data center, your TF service instance will stay up. Your source code won't be lost. Your building will not be flooded out by one disaster. You'll have to be one heck of a disaster to bring this thing down. We also don't give you a choice of data center today. We will in the near future. Near is a relative term, but I hope this year. So that way, if let's say for legal reasons you need to host this in the UK for a project or whatever, you can move it around different continents. So now that we've created all of these items, let's go back to backlog. And now what I'd like to do is I'd like to move these into sprints for anything that's been committed. So I'm going to drag into sprint one before I'm asked whether or not we can mass assign this to sprint one. There's no interface for that. It has crossed my mind more than once. But usually, again, this is not a bad exercise to go through. So I'm going to move these items into sprint one. And as I'm moving them, they're actually being put into the area path. A sprint is just an area path. So sprint one is being assigned here. So I'm going to move the last one. And then what I can do is I can click on sprint one. And now the view becomes even more interesting. I'm going to zoom out just a little bit so you can see more. Now that I have my stories, things that I want to work on, I want to create actual work for people to do. Adam is going to have to decide what will it take to get the marketing campaign. Well, maybe to get the marketing campaign, we have to update website home page to support marketing banner, right? That's a very specific thing. He needs to actually assign this to himself because he's a web developer. He's going to create another item while he's sitting in the Scrum meeting with his team, and he says, update search to show marketing ads, you know, or something like that. And maybe that's done by the search team. Maybe Annie handles that, so we'll save that. So work is being created. I'm going to create a bunch of really fake items. It's like, I don't know why, mentally, this is the hardest thing for me, coming up with names. I get so mad at myself, like, really, Dimitri, that's what you chose? I can't be more creative on the spot, so I apologize. But unless we have a good amount of items here, it's hard to sort of visualize what is happening. We'll add at least one item per every iteration. So we have sprint one happening. We know the dates it's happening in. We know who's working and what. We have a bunch of items we still need to assign to people. That's okay, we're going to do that in a second. We want to also set capacity. People don't have a limited time, and we want the tool to help us a little bit kind of track how people are doing. So I'm going to click on the capacity button up here, and every sprint needs its own capacity. This you can't automate. You have to set every sprint because people's lives change, right? So this week, Adam can do 6 hours. This number doesn't mean anything. It could be anything. I'm saying hours because that makes sense. Six, Dimitri can only do 1 hour. He's really busy. And Julia, in fact, maybe... Okay, fine, let's give her 1 hour. So that's everything that they can handle. I'm going to hit save. You can also choose activity. I mean, there's more advanced stuff. I'm not going to cover everything today. So let's go back to backlog. Now that we have capacity, we can start assigning work to people in terms of how many hours will something take. Well, remaining work on this, there's a remaining work. It expects a number, basically, in here. And that number goes against the capacity. So in here, we're going to put a 3 or 4. And we're going to put a 7. Now, that capacity is per week, right? So every week they'll have the capacity. I'm sorry, per day. So every day they'll have the capacity. We'll have to give them enough work before they go red, so to speak. But that's not what we're trying to do. We're just sort of figuring out how long different things will take. All right, we've done a pretty good assignment. And you can see on the right-hand side, you're going to get a bunch of information, how many hours of work people have assigned, who's freer than other people, who has more work, how much stuff is unassigned, what is your team's maximum capacity. I'll zoom in a little bit. So there's a bunch of good information here beyond the scope of this session, but definitely worth checking out. There's also additional charts often in the top right corners. Again, we can't show everything today. But once again, let's go to a cool feature called Board. This is where it gets a little bit confusing. And they changed the UI recently to make it clearer, which I think is good, but then I lost the board button. I couldn't find it for a few minutes there. I was like, where did it go? I'm about to demo this thing. This was a different demo. So the board here is not a Kanban board. We're no longer looking at stories. We're looking at tasks, really, right? Stories are just the anchor. I'm going to click on board, and now I'm going to get a very similar looking board. But instead of having those columns of workflow, we're going to see to do, in progress, and done, actual work. And we're going to see the stories on the left. We're not dragging stories, but we will be dragging between the states the different items. So let's say we are going to move everything into in progress. I'm dragging and dropping with my finger here. I love this stuff. I'm one of those guys that gets all excited when I get to play with my computer via touch. So now that I've assigned a bunch of stuff into in progress, if I open up the item, it will actually update the state in progress. So it's doing it for you. You don't have to do anything else. Once you do that, you can go in and say, you know, I've actually already done some work. This is already 2 hours remaining. This will start affecting the burndown charts. This is very hard to demo properly in terms of charts until time physically passes. But imagine that if we're doing this every day, you'd see that those charts actually reflecting all this information. So now we have our tasks defined. If we forgot something, we can come in here and we can say plus, test, save. Okay, now we have a new item. It's not assigned to anybody. Open it. This is so easy. A lot of folks I find have Team Foundation Server, even 2012, and don't realize they have this web access tool. It really wasn't that good before, so it really has improved. The other view we have here in the top right, we can switch from the current view says, let me see this from the perspective of these are the stories and these are the progress states for the tasks. Instead, I could say, show me the people and show me the progression of the people's work across. This is cool because if you have unassigned work, you can very easily see it. The weird thing is I just put a bunch of unassigned work into in progress. I guess the magical people are doing that work. But you can fix it. You can move it to people's actual columns. Now, if you have a large team, this can get a little cumbersome. You might want to get a higher resolution. Yes, this isn't the perfect world, but it's a lot better for especially smaller teams. And bigger teams can always do this from the list view of work items, which is right here. So let's say the boards are all fun, but I really just want a list of things. If I click on work items at any point, this is the more traditional capability that exists in Visual Studio or Microsoft Test Manager. You can do queries, and the queries will give you a list of stuff. And then you can have either a pop-up or a preview pane. So I'm going to turn off the pane because it's taking too much real estate for me. So this is my query. I can create a new query. I can say, let's do this. I'm going to say new, up here, new query. And I want to see any work item that is not in the... Let's see here. Actually, not just any. Let's do this. Any story whose state is not equal to, what do we have, is not equal to approved. Right, that's going to be my query. I'm going to hit save. I'm going to right-click on it because I want to rename it. So stories... You can move these windows around, so like I needed to read what I just typed. Not equal to approved. Okay, well, story is not approved. It's fine. And now if I click on results, and I would click on here, I guess my items were not in that state. That's fine. We'll, for demo purposes, we'll say any. I don't think I saved that query by accident. Oops, that's fine. Let's do product backlog. Same idea. So product backlog over here already was configured for me by default. It's actually a more complicated query. We give you that out of the box. I don't know why that one didn't save. As usual, something always fails when you get on stage as opposed to the hours of practice. So here, we have the traditional list view. What I'm trying to say with this list view is if you have, let's say, 100 items and 10 people, it's going to be really hard to use boards without the right resolution or the right team distribution. So you can come in here, you can open each item very quickly, make a change, or you can come back and you can say, I want to see a preview. So you can, as you click items, you can see the information. Everything depends on your resolution because of the web browser. That's kind of how you can work. And here is where you can move queries, anything that's considered a shared query, into the favorites. So the way you do it is you can right-click and say add to team favorites. And this will add the query into team favorites. I'm going to add this one as well. Current sprint, unfinished work. So I've added a bunch of queries. If I click on them, I'll see which items are in each query. So this one has two. The first one had nothing. This one has a bunch of stuff in it. Also, anywhere there's hierarchy, it will show you the hierarchy. So if it brought back a bunch of unfinished work, it will show you the work in the sense of what are the stories and the tasks that are not finished with that story, and therefore the story is not finished, right, until all the tasks are completed. I'm then going to click on home, and my home page will drastically change to include all the queries that I just pinned. And let's do this next. There's a full security thing. You can manage that. Right now, by default, it's pretty open. They just can't create team projects. There's a few restrictions. Most, like, in your team that you've given people access to, we can give them enough access to get their job done the way we see it, and most of it is pretty well logged. So even if they do something, you should know. One thing I want to show you, this is a new feature we added. I'm going to go back to Tailspin Toys for a second, is sometimes you have more than one team and you need to manage work across those teams. We've announced Monday the concept of features. So here where I have more data, I'm going to click on work. I'm going to click on features. And I'm going to show you that there's a bunch of what we call features. They're purple, which are tasks that apply to more than one team. Like the marketing campaign could be the graphics team and the web team and search team, all these teams working together. And from here, if you say backlog instead of features in the top right, these are like the filters for the view. You can actually see which team in which sprint has what work assigned and what is the state of that work. So the web team, the UX team in sprint one have new items which are not yet in progress. You know, it's all rolled up. You can drill down all the way down to tasks. This takes more to configure, so I don't want to waste your time, but you could configure it this way where you have one team or some team that is the leadership team. They configure these features. Your team leaders make sure that all stories link back to the right features. And then they get a view as managers of this hierarchy, or the team leads even can see what the other teams are doing to get everything done. So this is our first kind of baby steps to make Enterprise Agile an even more real story than it is today. And that's funny to say because most of our users are enterprises, but we're really feeling like we can do more for the enterprise story. For the smaller shops, we already have, I think, more than most people can handle. So that's just a quick demo. I'm going to switch back to our second session. Yes. It's going to be a little more complicated. Let's talk as soon as the session's over. I want to ask you more questions before I answer it. But that's a good question. There's certainly more than one way to work as a team. And what you're going to see is that this product, forever and ever, has been very flexible on premises, where you can customize the heck out of it and add all sorts of fields and do, you know, make this as crazy as you want. The more we invest into these pretty boards, the more impact it has when you customize. And on the service, you can't customize. So I couldn't like even show you some of that. There are ways to handle it. And if that's your scenario, you know, you stay on premises. It's not a bad way to go. It's the only way for 10 years to go. So certainly service has some limitations. But we'll chat about that as soon as the session is over. All right, so we've done the work. Let's go back to our team room, the one we configured in the beginning. Let's see what's been happening there. Since I created a bunch of tasks and backlog items, everything is being logged. The team room is your unifying place. Finally, you don't have to feel alone with this product. I mean, especially if you're like a developer working away from your team, it can be pretty lonely in TFS, right? Except for that occasional merge of source control that, you know, until people break something, you don't feel like you're working with others. Now, our teams have been using this for, I think, over 4 or 5 months. As in the TFS teams that are building this product, these products, Visual Studio, Team Foundation, and Microsoft's moving to team rooms physically on site, so our teams are getting together. But many team members work remote, other countries even sometimes, and they're in the team rooms all day, and they're chatting with each other, and they can see activity. It has really changed the way we work. We're really happy with the feature. One thing I want to ask is that if you guys use this, you have feedback, please let us know. Please let me know. It doesn't matter. Anybody from the Microsoft VS team, because we want to evolve team rooms to suit our customers. We used to make features and assume everybody wanted them a certain way. We've created this feature, what we feel with the bare minimum of features, because we want to first hear your feedback. And if we don't hear feedback, we'll have to make some assumptions. But we really want to evolve new features. Since we can ship every couple of weeks, we can do that, right? We can hear people and change something. In a few months, you might see a whole different product. That's our hope. So let us know. So I've come in here now, and I've seen a bunch of activity. In this case, it's all me, but that's pretty cool. I can use the calendar to go back. It's all durable. Again, nothing can be deleted. I can always see what's happening. So there you go. That's a quick team room demo. Continual team room demo. Next, let's talk about version control. Version control we're going to do through the traditional team Visual Studio, because that's the only way we can do it. In version control, I'm going to connect to this new project that I created. I'm going to use the Team Explorer. I'm going to go pretty quickly for this. It's not, you know, the main part of the demo. I just want to put some source code in there. So I'm going to click on Source Explorer. Well, actually, first I need to connect to the right project. I did that recently. I checked in a bunch of stuff, and then I'm like, oh, I'm not actually in the right place. So now I hopefully will be. And source control as well. Let's open this. All right, second session, good. I'm going to map this local workspace to my C drive. And I'm going to check on a project. So yes, get latest. And then create new project, file new project. We're going to create a website. Nothing exciting, just an empty MVC4 website. We're going to put it into second session folder. And here we go. We have source being created. As soon as that's created, I'm going to right-click and check it in. And then I'm going to show you guys this. So in the web, we now have a code view. Code view allows you to see a couple of things. First of all, you can see your actual code. Second of all, you can see change sets to your code as people are checking in changes. Third, you can see the compare tool in the web, so you can see two files side by side and a change set, see what actually changed. You can add comments to do light code reviews. You can also just see history of what's been happening, if people are playing by the rules, associating check-ins with work items, et cetera, et cetera. All of that is going to be available here. You can also view shelf sets, which is very valuable. Especially, this has happened to me many times. Somebody will say, Dimitri, I'm going to shelf something. I want you to look at it. Because they're remote, or, you know, I'm busy today. And it's such a pain mentally, like I have to unshelve it just to look at it. To me, that's always been a really big pain. Now I can go on the web whenever I have time and look at the code. If I don't need to run it, I can just look at it, and I can do a compare of his shelf set versus what he started with. So it gives me some really cool capabilities. But first, we need some code before we can see that. I think I broke my source control a little bit. I don't think I've ever actually seen that dialogue in Visual Studio. You learn something new every day, but sometimes it's not in the way you want it to. All right, hold on a second. For some reason I created two folders. My computer is such a mess, I can't show it, unfortunately, but I have the next version of Visual Studio installed, the pre-beta. That's broke all sorts of things that I was going to show in a different session. I found that out this morning before my session, luckily, so. It wasn't a complete disaster, but sometimes things do happen. Okay, hold on a second. Did I not map it properly? Oh, okay, I see what's happening here. All right, I'm gonna go the path of least resistance, and I'm gonna move this project real quick. Don't know why it happened, don't care. Not important, because I do want you guys to see kind of the full experience there. So adding this to source control should now work. Done, check in, add a comment, check it all in. So now we have the traditional Visual Studio experience. We're using Visual Studio to upload source control into TFS. The big change will happen as soon as this blue line gets to the end, where we're actually going to see that check in right away when we refresh the web view. Few more seconds. Internet is so much faster now that everybody's leaving. This took forever in my first session. At least it felt like that. All right, we have our change set. So I'm going to go. I'm going to just refresh the page. And now I see it. In my left-hand side, I see exactly what I expected. I see my MVC application, my solution, my package. This is really bad because it's actually in the root folder, you know, things you'd never do normally. But again, it shows illustrates the point. On the right-hand side, I have something called contents view. So I see the contents of this folder over here. If I'm to click on my application, I now have, you know, same kind of as the tree view, but I have it here. Now the other view is called history. So let's do it from the very top. Well, this will be fine. Click on history. I can see that this code was created by this change set, and there's been no changes afterwards. There's no work item. That means whoever checked it in did not associate it with a work item. We know who did that. We know when. We know the comment he put. Funny guy, test, test. If I click, I get change set view. So what just happened is I flipped from Explorer to change set. And it went into change set 57. It shows me how many files were added, deleted, changed. I can go to every single file. So what I'll do is I'll make one more change. I'll come in here, and I'm going to modify something. I'll go into, let's say, add another file, add a controller. I'm also going to go into webconfig. I'm going to change some version numbers. I'm going to change some flags. I'm going to check it in. Normally, you would use a work item with every check-in. This is not normal. This is quick and dirty. My timer here is counting down. And I'll do one more change just to kind of have the point. And that's it. We're done with Visual Studio for now. Let's check that in. Done. So now we have a bunch of changes. I'm going to go back to change set. I'm going to go to change sets and look at the history. Now I can actually see that everything kind of started here. There was other things happening, but really from our demo, right? I checked it in. I made a change. If I click on change 59, where two files were modified, I can see right there in the web the comparison. I can do side by side. I can do it inline. Very, very powerful. It's color coding for me. So let's go back to something prettier with more detail. I'm going to go back to this change set where I changed, right? Changed here, changed here, changed here. Now I'm going to add a comment because let's say I come in here and I see one of my team members. Let's say I'm Brian, and I'm like, this is fine, this is fine. Oh, this is maybe not the right thing to do. Maybe I'm not sure. These two changes, I'm going to select them, and I'm going to hit the comment button. It's going to give me a comment. This is something, again, we released on Monday. It's a small feature, but it could be a big deal. And I'm going to say, is this the correct change? I'm going to save that. There's a reply button. Folks on my team can come in and reply to this and say yes, no, leave their comment. This is not really designed to be that durable. You can go ahead and fairly easily come in and delete. I'm going to zoom out a little. I think it's struggling because of my view resolution here. Yeah, let's go to like 125. So people can come in here. There's an X. You can kill a comment. And they're not stored anywhere. They're really designed to be lightweight discussions on your code changes. You can't add a comment like this from the web on just a code file. It has to be on a change set or a shell set, a change, right? Two things changing. You can add it to a line, multiple lines. You can add it at the top of the file that's being changed, the left side, the right side. You can have a discussion. There's no notifications today, so it's not like it's telling them there's a comment. We think eventually we want to enable that. But you can go into the team room right now and say, hey, Dimitri, please check change set number, right? And it'll link to the change set for that person. So then they can go in the team room and take a look at that. If they're online, if they're not, send them an email. I hate to say that, but sometimes that does work. So folks can have nice little discussions in here. So very, very powerful features. Any comments so far? Questions? No, the question is the comment saved as part of the file? No, comments and files are what they are. Comments and check-ins are what they are. These are comments on change sets from the web. We will see this feature evolve, but today this is how much you have, sort of. Again, we welcome your feedback. We truly do. So I'm going to go back to Explorer, and I'm going to show you one more cool feature. I like this one. It's a right-click and download a zip. Small feature, but how many times did you just want a snapshot of all that code and you didn't want to start Visual Studio? Now you can go on the web, or maybe you're home, you want to copy because you know you're stealing it or something. But let's assume nobody's stealing anything. I'm just being funny, I hope. You can also add, you can also download a single file, a folder, or the whole tree. You can click anywhere. It says just a download zip and pulls it down. You can also add to my team favorites or your favorites. If I add it to team favorites, any changes from the root down will be on the home page. So when I go home, I now have, hey, 6 recent changes have been made in this second session. Second session is the root folder name. So now we're getting a lot more information here. And as a final trick, I'm going to show you another small but fun feature in the web. If you go to Contents, Theme, Images, and you click on an image, Contents view will actually show you the image. Icons, PNGs, a lot of formats are supported. So you can view code this way. You can view JavaScript, config, see it's color-coded. I'll show you some more files just to drive the point home. Things are blue, things are green. It gives you a really good way of reading through this, and the compare tool exists against change sets. You can make this thing full screen. You can exit full screen. You can view different kind of activity within this file. This file was affected by a bunch of change sets and a bunch of dates. And you can download this file to your computer. That's new, by the way. I've never seen that button before, I think. Maybe I missed it. There's so much, you know, to learn. But that's the cool thing about being on the service. You get new features all the time. You don't have to do anything about it. All right, so we've seen that. We've done comments. Let's talk about build and deploy. This you need to use Visual Studio for. In Visual Studio, you can create a build in your on-premises environment today of your project. In the cloud, we support a ton of stuff to be built. We have Windows Server 2012 that was just upgraded on our virtual machines. And we have, therefore, Windows 8 applications can be built finally. That was a limitation we had for a bit of time. There's a web page with a list of SDKs we support out of the box. So the build machine can work with anything that we pretty much allow you, which is all the popular SDKs from Microsoft. We also allow you to add DLLs into a folder, point to it, and do a build. It'll take those into account. If you have something really weird that you need to install on your machine to customize it, you can set up your own build server in a VM in any cloud, you know, that you can afford, you know, Azure, as you know, your own private cloud, anything with connectivity from the internet, and the service can build against it if you want. But you can't log into the VM we create. The VMs we create, we pull them out of the catalog, we create them, we use your source, latest. The reason why, we want to make sure nobody's code ever mixes, it's for security reasons. In the future, I can see maybe them improving that where you can request, you know, your own VM image to sort of be available, but today that's just not it. But you can stand one up, there's actually instructions that you can follow how to create a VM and then point the service to that VM. Not a blocker. All right, next, let's take a look at the builds. So we're going to use the builds in the cloud. I'm going to go to Team Explorer. I'm going to click on builds. And in builds, I'm going to create a new build definition. I will not bore you with details or explaining what builds are, except that your source code is compiled. I'm going to give it a name. And I'm going to save it. You have to create builds from Visual Studio. But you can execute and see builds from the web. That's kind of a cool feature. I hope one day you can create them there as well. The trigger for my build is going to be manual. That's the default. That's fine. I'm going to go to the web, go to build, take a look. There's my new build that was just created. I can right-click. Same thing. Add to team favorites. Cool. Add that to team favorites. Click on it. Go to queued. Nothing is queued yet. Right-click. Queue the build. Normal priority. And go. This build will finish. When I was doing the previous session, I when it was really late at night, the day before, and I was practicing, I imagined the builds being faster, let's put it this way. It didn't finish, and then I thought something was wrong, and I canceled it, and I'm an idiot, basically. So today, I might not wait for this to finish. If it does, it does. When the build does finish, it will put the bits that it built into source control for you, and you can pull them down using the right-click, save to zip file, let's say, or you can publish them out to Azure using the integration. I'll show you how the integration is configured. And I'll show you what is the outcome of that integration. But basically, any website can be deployed straight to Azure every time you do a check-in or every time you decide to trigger a build based on time or some other criteria, manual execution. This build is not that. This is like a just build and put into source control. When you go to Windows Azure, I'll show you that experience. So I'm going to go to Windows Azure, click on Portal. I love Windows Azure. I've been using it and Team Foundation Service since the employee beta came out. And I mean, just sort of what it gives people as an opportunity, right, to create a source control in the cloud. You have part of your team collaboration right there. You build something, you deploy it to Azure. You become successful. You can deploy it all over the world. You can be the next Facebook. We hope there will be the next Facebook eventually here. But for now, it's a lot of enterprises and small businesses. So here is a site that I've created before. Windows Azure, again, this isn't a Windows Azure session. There's a whole session on this, by the way, guys, just like Azure deployments and yada, yada. Go take a look. There's a whole session in the catalog. But this would be just a quick example. If you create a new website, is what they call it, you can host any service or MVC or web forms, PHP. You can host a bunch of stuff in there. And what you can do is, I'm going to create a new one. So here I'm going to say I want to create a quick website. This is actually provisioning on a machine that's allowing in a shared instance in the cloud. It's provisioning you a website that's just yours with your own FTP site. It's doing all that setup. It's done. The URL is up on the internet. You can now assign a custom domain, SSL. You can do all sorts of real-world stuff. For now, we just don't care. I'm going to enter this new site I created. In this new site, if I go to dashboard, there's a button that says set up deployment from source control. And this is where I think it's kind of cool. Team Foundation Service, well, that's kind of a given for me already. But the fact that you can deploy from Dropbox, you can hook this thing up to a Dropbox folder. You can drop source into Dropbox. When the change is detected, it'll be pushed to Azure in real time. It's cool. You can use Bitbucket, CodePlex, other external repositories. I'm going to choose Team Foundation Service. I'm going to give it our account name. I'm sorry? I'm going to give it the account name, and I'm going to say authorize. So all I've done is I've told Azure, here I'll zoom in just to kind of illustrate the point. I've told Windows Azure, this TFS service URL, I want to work with this Azure website. Once I do that, it goes to that service, it goes to that Team Foundation service, and it says, hey, Team Foundation service, whoever's logged in with that live ID wants, you know, to get access, and that live ID does have access, so everything matches up. My live ID works for Azure. The same live ID works for this TM Foundation service. Only thing I have left to do now is accept this. I'm going to accept it. And this will go in, look, and say, okay, which project? I want to use second session. By default, this was a question that I asked. I said, how does it know what I want to deploy? What if I have like 30 websites in there? This is funny, but it chooses the first one it finds, and you can change it afterwards. But that was like, how does it know? But every demo I do has one website, so it always works. Little things in the real world. I try to always think of the real world. I know we do a lot of demos, then you go home and you get frustrated with something. So I try to think of what else I could answer for you, and I have used this for real, so this works pretty well. You know, I have no complaints. And that's it. It's been configured. If I go back here and I refresh, in the bottom left, we're going to see, oh, that build completed, awesome. We're going to see that there's now something called an MS Tech Ed 11, which is the website name, has a continuous delivery build against something in that configuration. I can look at that config using Visual Studio and change the settings, but that's perfectly fine. I'm going to do a build. By default, a check-in would trigger it, but I'm going to trigger it from here. And in theory, in a minute, that should be done, and we will see a website come online. And if not, I have a fake website, which I will quickly show you and say that's the website. And no, I'm kidding. I'm not going to do that. The thought had crossed my mind. You know, I was like, would anybody ever notice if I just showed them my website? Like, oh, this looks good. But this is where the deployment tab in Azure actually is also integrated. Once you kick off a build, once that build is publishing to Azure, this dashboard will just start refreshing and start showing, hey, a build's coming in, we're deploying, give you error state or success state, everything here. And then the URL of the website, which is on the dashboard, will light up. In this case, that's the URL. That's the default website. Obviously, that's not it yet, but that'll work. So This will kick in as soon as the build is done. We're not going to wait. I'm going to show you one more feature, come back, and hopefully we'll have a website. So I have 5 minutes left. I'm going to show you guys one last feature, which is test. The test capability has been enhanced, in, I think, in a very important way on Monday. One enhancement that we made is this button. This button did not exist before Monday. I'm going to try to zoom in to give you guys a better view. When we created the ability to view test cases from the web, change them, and run manual tests from the web, we did this in update 2 timeframe, and even before that on the service. We did not allow you, we just didn't have the code written for it, the ability to create a test plan and the test suites from the web. So you first had to use Microsoft Test Manager, MTM. You had to go in, create the first the plan, then the suites, and then you can go in the web and do whatever the web allowed you. Now we broke that dependency. So MTM still has the advantage. It's a product that can do a video recording, can do a coded UI testing. MTM is still a very good product. But for a certain kind of testing, this is now becoming enough. You know, you can come in here, maybe just kind of shell out, hey, I want a test plan. I want to make it based on requirements. Here's some test cases. I want to associate work items. I never left the browser. I do all of that here. So I'm going to go ahead and create a test plan. MVC website test plan associated with sprint 1. And then, then we are going to create a new static suite. Some tests. Then I'm going to create a new test case. We have no tests in here. Some test number 1 assigned to Brian with step 1, step 2, step 3. Cool, it worked. That's the expected result. All right, save that. Question? Yeah. All right, so now we have the test plan, a test suite, we have the test case, we can run it. So if I click run, it's going to give me a browser pop-up and let me do a manual run-through. One customer is using this to test things on a Mac. They're on a Mac, they have, I believe, the iPhone emulator running on there, and they're running manual test cases, and it's working just fine because it's a web browser, it doesn't care. Here, I'm going to say worked, and then, it failed. It failed because this isn't a Mac. And I'm going to create a bug. And I'm going to say, I need to buy a Mac to test iOS. I'm just being so funny. I know it's everyone's dying here. I'm going to assign this bug to Julia and save. But besides my bad jokes, this is very powerful. You can come in here and you can do a manual test, create bugs for people. You can assign, you can attach comments. So if you want an overall comment, this is a a bad test. Let's say that's your opinion. You can see the state, you can do an attachment, you can add a screenshot or a file, and then once you're done, hit save and close, and the state changes right here to failed. That's all working. Let's check on our build. Oh, look at that. Azure has received a build from our service, and our website. It's a very bad way. Well, the build worked, but the website was not so good. See, I'd rather not deploy at all if it's going to be mean to me. Like, I know why. You know what the problem is? The problem is I never actually created anything whatsoever in this site. Yeah, that's my fault. But it worked. So we have a successful state with an error on our screen. The point is you can see the login here. You can click on the log, and that kicks you from Azure into your build to see why the build was successful in this case or maybe not. And, of course, in here, you can always go to builds. You can always see completed builds, deployed builds. Only one build was deployed. You can see a redeploy button here. I don't remember this lock being here before. Dimitri has to learn about that. So, and you can queue more builds, et cetera. If I go back to the home page, since it's pinned to the home page, we can actually see that we've been having good success. The builds are succeeding. And if we go to team room, we will see that we can see all the change sets coming in here. But the one thing we won't see is the builds, because in order to define which builds we see, we had to have builds. And when we started, we didn't have any. So in the future, the builds will actually show up. I just have to come in here and specify that I do want to monitor this build from the team room. So in the future, that would show up. So that's the demos. I do want to point out a couple of things. You can use, again, Visual Studio 2008 and up with this thing for sure, without any sort of headaches. Eclipse, Git clients, Xcode, and what we call the MSSCCI provider enabled applications like VB6. What a terrible name, must have been made a long time ago. Server versus service, I do want to point out a couple of capabilities. We don't have any SharePoint, we don't have any reporting capabilities, we don't yet allow you to do Active Directory integration. You can be assured we'd like to enable all those things soon, some faster than others. I just have nothing to announce yet. You'll see a lot coming from this team soon. You don't have the ability to do a virtual test with a lab manager. So if you have lab manager running, this is also not for you. Really, you know, this is a baby from our perspective, but it's for what it does it well. And our team is super committed. Brian Harry, who runs the team, you don't know. The things he will do to us, if something even I don't know, hiccups on here, he's very, very serious about the customer, you guys. And I'm not saying it's going to be perfect, but we're taking it very, very seriously as a business model, as a product, and we care about our customers. Brian Harry apparently responds to emails on his contact requests on his blog, because he seed me at one of them yesterday. So you guys can send feedback to anybody on the team, and we'll take it very seriously. If something is very important to you and holding you back from adopting the service, let us know. If you use it and you like or don't like something, let us know as well. We really do care about your feedback. We've seen a lot today. We've touched on, I think, all of those points. If you have any questions, I'm here, but that's pretty much the conclusion of the session. So thank you very much for coming for the repeat. I appreciate your time. Thank you.